Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I meet with military veterans to learn about what they do in their civilian career, how they got there, and advice for other veterans seeking to do the same. Today's episode number 163 with Kelly Perdue.
These four people who are brilliant at what they do were very, very impressed with all four of you.
Thank you.
So to start the evening, I have to say, Kevin, you're fired. Sandy, you're fired.
Jennifer, you're fired. Kelly, you're hired.
Well, I want to start by giving Kelly's background because it's pretty singular from everyone that I've interviewed in the last 163 of these interviews. Kelly is the co-founder and managing general partner of Moonshots Capital, which he founded with a fellow West Point grad and exists to invest in exceptional entrepreneurs with world-changing ideas. He started out at West Point, after which he served in the U.S. Army as an intelligence officer. Since then, he has worked as a founder, board member, CEO, COO, CFO, as well as in business development and in sales. He has raised institutional financing, grown businesses, downsized businesses, and sold businesses for eight-figure exits. Perhaps most uniquely, he is the season two winner of the television show The Apprentice, after which he apprenticed to Donald Trump and was involved in multiple real estate projects with Donald Trump. He holds both an MBA and a Juris Doctorate from UCLA. We talk about a lot of things in this interview. We talk about investing, what that is, how veterans might find a way to become an investor. But we also talk about the flip side. Kelly's firm has invested in many military veterans and their companies. And so he talks about common weaknesses, common strengths for veterans, advice for aspiring veteran entrepreneurs. We also talk about, you know, given the way that Kelly has had a very public presence as a veteran, his thoughts on selling yourself, which is one of the top three challenges that people I have on the show talk about. How do you sell yourself? How do you present yourself when you come from a military background where that's either not accepted or acceptable or not practiced? We talk about what it was like being on The Apprentice. We talk about work-life balance, so many things that are applicable to every civilian career path. Whether or not you're interested in investing or becoming an entrepreneur, I think there's a lot to learn from this interview. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes that reference a text transcript of this discussion, lots of other information, as well as over 160 other interviews with other career paths. So whether you're interested in real estate or finance or consulting or writing a book or whatever that might be, there are interviews of other veterans who have done that and are willing to help you and give advice to help you find out if that career path is right for you and advice on how to be successful in your post-service career. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Kelly Perdue. Joining me today in Los Angeles, California is Kelly Perdue. Kelly, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
So, Kelly, maybe just to start things off, one of the many things that I think is so interesting about your story is you've had such a tremendously wide variety of careers since you left the Army. And I know that so many of the people that listen to this show, they really don't even know where to start. And so I'm curious what advice you have for those who are on active duty about how they might try to figure out what they want to do when they do get out of the military.
So that's a great question. And obviously a lot of people think about it. And it comes back to trying to tie together what I'd say are passions in terms of what you functionally like to do. Right? Are you extroverted, introverted, and then tying that to what you have inclination, you know, you actually have some capabilities for. So do you have a lot of comfort level and or affinity for math? Or is the written word better? Or you like being up in front of people kind of selling biz dev components? So there's kind of a place for everyone, and figuring out the combination of what you're good at and what you like to do. And then the most important part is really the information gathering component, because leaving the military, if that's kind of all you've been doing in your adult life, and heading out into the business world is at best daunting and can be kind of, for most people, super, super scary, because it's a new language, a new world, and it doesn't look or sound or act or feel like anything that you're used to.
I love that. I mean, I love that thought that self-knowledge is so important in figuring out what the characteristics are of that eventual job. Another thing that I wanted to ask you about is I read a Huffington Post article in which you shared that three of the most helpful traits from your military background and your civilian career have been the leadership experience, the discipline and integrity you learned in the military. I'm wondering if there's a flip side of any common weaknesses or blind spots, either that you've seen in yourself or in the other veterans you've worked with since leaving the Army.
So the, I guess, areas of growth, mm-hmm. A nice way of saying weaknesses.
Yeah.
I've got 8-year-old boy girl twins who are in second grade, and we're in a kindler, gentler world where, you know, the stretch goals for individuals coming out of the military. So personally, I think that my personality and the way that I operated fit nicely inside of a military kind of structure, hierarchy, organization, where some of the requirements for niceties, like pleases and thank yous and having to explain yourself repeatedly, weren't always absolutely necessary, because you're going for efficiency of communication and speed and, you know, very precise discussions or communicating information, to the civilian sector, where those things mean a lot more. And carry a lot more weight. So I guess retraining into that habit is one component. And second, so the idea of timelines, like when you say you're going to get something done in a certain time, there are many groups of people and skills that don't lend themselves to hitting timelines in the same way that you might think of it as, hitting all of the exact timelines in an operations order, you know, i.e. your creative department may not think about hitting timelines the exact same way that you do or that you had coming from your military background. So figuring out the right method for communicating and motivating groups who kind of think about things differently is something that I still work on. And that's not probably just from coming from the military, but in any groups of people who have a little different way of looking at things, that can be something of a challenge.
I think that's true with me and my wife too. I'm still like, if there's something going on at 7, I'm going to be there right at 7. And she has a much more flexible interpretation. So even 10 years out of the military, it's like a slow adjustment to get used to not feeling
what
like there's drastic penalties.
Late, yeah. Really, right?
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. What is late? You know.
One of the things I was just really curious to ask you about, and that's about selling yourself. And this is the 162nd interview I've done with veterans, and one of the biggest commonalities is that guests talk about the difficulty they have in selling themselves in interviews, in jobs, once they're in the job. And, you know, your background, especially, you know, when I think of being a reality TV star, you've had to excel in some way at selling yourself. And I'm wondering if you have advice for veterans about how they can approach this concept of selling themselves or really advocating for themselves in the workplace that might still be authentic to who they are as people.
Yeah, I think that the kind of fundamental, the underpinnings of what you glean and gain and kind of you sponge up, whether you like it or not, it rubs off on you. You actually have millions of dollars spent on you in leadership training. It's the only place in the world that happens. Mm-hmm. Nobody takes you and explains to you, you know, mass offensive maneuver, like, and walks you through how to delegate, how to give orders, how to take orders, structuring operations orders all the way through to after action. There's no place that does that, right? Business school is more technical and has a lot of finance and HR and different dynamics like that. But nobody really focuses on leadership other than the military. And that's something that's incredibly valuable. And in fact, it's the thesis for what I do now. My business partner and I, he's also a West Point graduate, and he served 17 years in the military, military intelligence officer, Bronze Star, just phenomenal background. But our kind of assessment of all of the early stage technology companies that we've ever invested in or been a part of, the number one kind of variable that's the most important thing for being successful is leadership. So being that, you know, authentically we understand what it means to have been in the military and have that leadership training, all things being equal or even a little unequal, I'm picking the team that's got a military veteran on it, mm-hmm. because they're going to show up on time, move faster, follow directions, solve the problem. You know, again, all things being equal, the bar for the integrity component's been beaten into them. Like, there's so many dynamics at play that someone who's coming into the civilian world needs to understand that and have that level of confidence, but also a humility in that there is a lot to learn in terms of lexicon, industry expertise, domain knowledge, whatever it might be, but that you're bringing an amazing skill set to it that would enable you hopefully to, you know, outperform.
That's great. I love that. And could you share, you know, especially if someone's on active duty, how would you explain what Moonshot's Capital is and the type of work that you do there on a day-to-day basis?
So that weird Silicon Valley thing, where these hotshot, unbelievable, high-performing, super successful, billion-dollar companies, people refer to them as unicorns, those were all initially invested in by venture capitalists. And venture capitalists, by the term, basically you're taking money and you're putting it into a company or a venture and you're risking it, right? So we take money, we buy some equity in a company, and then we help that company to succeed so that it gets some liquidity event. And the liquidity means it either sells, like to somebody else buys it, a Google or Microsoft or Amazon, whatever, buys that company, or they go public and they get to liquidity that way. And that then returns money to us, which we return back to the people who gave us their money to invest in these early stage technology companies and help them succeed. Mm. So it's really about picking what we consider to be the best leadership and then helping them succeed at what they're trying to do. Mm.
So I'm guessing a good chunk of your time is in a given, you know, I imagine there's a tremendous amount of variety in your work week, but I'm imagining you're constantly meeting with new companies and trying to really figure out if they have the potential to grow, and you're helping the companies you've invested in grow. Is that about right? Like, what does your typical activities look like in a day?
So yeah, one of our very, very, you know, big kind of work efforts inside of the venture, any kind of venture capital firm, is sourcing deals, is what that's called. So the companies that want to get, you know, want you to invest in them, come and present to you. And there's an entire conversion funnel, right, if you will, of those that approach you, those that you think you should talk to, ask a few more questions. They pass that hurdle. The next is meet in person, you know, press flesh, look them in the eye, ask the harder questions. Then they pass that hurdle. You're conducting due diligence in the marketplace with some of their customers, with some of the background checks, whatever it might be. And then it's, can you get to deal terms that make sense for both you as an investor, because you need to own a certain percentage of the company, and the founders or the owners, the current owners of the company, want to retain some, but they want money to spend to grow the company. So we see 120 to 200 deals every month, and usually maybe a dozen we actually have meetings with, because they've passed through certain criteria we have for selection. And then maybe a couple more we do follow on with, so that at any one time we've got a hot list of 5 to 8 that we're considering putting money into. But over the course of a year, we see, you know, well over 1,000 new businesses come to us.
I had read, and I'm not sure how long ago this was, but I had read that about 70% of your investments have been in companies that are associated with a military veteran in some way. And I know that so many people that listen to this podcast are veterans or on active duty. They aspire one day to be entrepreneurs. I'm curious what advice you have for a veteran who wants to go out and start their own company.
Well, gathering information, right? Intel. I know I was a military intelligence officer, so maybe I'm biased. But, being an entrepreneur sounds sexy. And certainly it's been made sexy over the course of time, but it's definitely not for everyone. My best advice would be to talk to entrepreneurs, both people who've been in the military and people who haven't, and talk to them about what it means for and not just the ones that are super successful and up on panels talking, but all of them, including the ones that haven't made it or tried and why they failed and what it meant for their lives, because it really is a life choice selection, right? You're foregoing what, you know, a lot of people look at as maybe higher security, larger company, bigger teams early on, shared responsibilities, a whole bunch of stuff that seems a lot more familiar to somebody who's been in the military than going kind of the lone wolf route of you're the entrepreneur, the buck stops with you. You know, you're sweating out payroll, monthly payroll while you're taking a shower. You're like, okay, where's the next, you know, but you have a lot of knowledge. You have a lot more control. It's a lot more on your shoulders of figuring out what's happening next. And that stress, and/or excitement, can be a little bit like a narcotic for some people. But it also can be a hammer, right? And completely devastate, you know, your personal finances, your family relationships, your friends. It is not for the faint of heart by any stretch of the imagination. If you're going to go at it too, you have to, you know, have the passion and the persistence to kind of see it through to the end, either direction. And it's just super, super hard to do.
And I guess building on that, one of the things I appreciated, because, you know, when I look at your career path, you've had so many different successes in so many different areas. But I read an article where you talked about a failure you had with your very first business. And I'll put a link in the show notes for listeners who want to learn more about that. But one thing I've seen in these interviews is that most people I talk to, we come from a military background where failure is catastrophic. It can cost lives and it can cost, you know, there's going to be major repercussions. And entrepreneurship in particular is a path associated with a lot of failure. And I'm wondering if you have any advice for people listening about how to reconcile in their civilian career more tolerance of failure, or how to even approach recovering from failure as they experience that in whatever career path they pursue.
So there's a lot of tension for me around that subject because, you know, there's hundreds of business books written about how much you learn from failure, and failure is where a lot of stuff happens and you have to fail to succeed and all that kind of stuff. But if you're running a going concern, meaning a business that's operating profitably and you're hiring people, you're responsible pretty much for their lives. And not to the same extent of, you know, you're on an aircraft carrier and if you don't win or you don't succeed, people are going to die. But, you know, for a civilian person, the loss of a job because of your poor, you know, work as the leader of the company, or your inability to see what the competition's doing, or whatever the kind of failure component is, I mean, you know, in, I guess, civilian terms, there should be just as much chagrin at that occurring as there is, you know, on the military side. So I don't downplay at all the responsibility of leadership to ensure that their company is successful. And it is warfare to some degree, right? I'm making air quotation marks on warfare because you're battling for, you know, your livelihood. I mean, you literally are. That doesn't mean everybody can't go find a job and you can't help them go do that, but you've pretty epically failed if your company ends. Now, that's a little different than the brand new startup. The brand new startup, you're going kind of one against the world. And likelihood is you're going to fail, and you kind of know that going into it. So it's almost like you're a little you got to be a little bit crazy to be an entrepreneur. So, you know, on that early path where it's primarily you and your resources and maybe your co-founders and maybe a couple people who you've crazily convinced to join the, you know, to join the cause to build this new product or service that's going to change the world. Everybody enters that scenario eyes wide open that it's likely, you know, not going to be a great outcome, at least by the numbers. It's definitely going to be a bad outcome. And it's those people that are just crazy enough and can persevere through the dips, can still exert that leadership of, you know, the leadership's really, you know, the ability to motivate others to action. And those others you're motivating are the team that's building the product or the service, the clients that you get to sign on when there's no real company yet, so you can start to generate revenue, the investors you get like me to buy into your vision and write you a, you know, a check that allows you to have more people to build this thing. So exhibiting those leadership characteristics, you know, that's really what, you know, sets apart the great companies from the ones that don't make it.
And, you know, one thing I also wanted to ask you about, and for whatever reason, so many listeners send in questions about this, but there's a lot of questions around work-life balance. And on the one hand, you seem like someone who just is constantly moving. You're a public speaker, you're an author, you've got twins, you're running your own investment company. But then I also know that in your book, you talked about how not having work-life balance was a contributor to your first company failing. And so I'm curious what advice you have for people as they think about work-life balance in their civilian career.
Yeah, my that first company, you know, I was living in Los Angeles. A lot of the clients and the things that I was working on were on the East Coast. So very early mornings on the left coast, I'm up. Next thing you know, after many phone calls and running spreadsheets and doing what I can in the business, you know, it's 2 p.m. I'm still sitting there in my underwear, haven't eaten. So, you know, throw something in the microwave, you know, stop dating, didn't have a girlfriend, stop seeing my friends, gained weight, stopped working out. And that didn't help anything. That didn't help my energy level. It certainly didn't help my health, and didn't put me in any position to execute on the best deals that were coming through and or be able to scale or grow the business. And I kind of vowed to myself after that first foray that I'm a la, I think it's Tony Robbins, but, you know, stick the big, you know, boulders in the jar first, because once you put all the little stuff in, then there's no room for them. So taking care of yourself, taking care of your family, and then, you know, maintaining some semblance of a set of friends and social life are incredibly important to being successful as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I love that. I can completely relate. I went through a phase with my startup of just gaining weight and losing friends and just working around the clock. And in retrospect, I think part of the appeal was that rush of just feeling busy all the time, but it came at the expense of productivity. It came at the expense of just, you know, I'm working every hour of the day, but I'm probably not really present for many of those hours, and I'm not really outputting as much as I could be because you're just running on fumes rather than, you know, a peak performing machine. So I love that thought of taking care of those boulders in the jar before you put in the sand and the gravel and the water and everything else.
Yep.
I was also curious, you know, your path was going from the Army. You got your MBA and Juris Doctorate, and, you know, that mirrors – I went straight from the military and got my MBA as well. But I'm curious now that things have changed, how would you advise someone to consider whether or not to get that post-service higher education, or whether it's more advantageous to just go directly into the job market and get that experience?
So I'm absolutely not a, oh, it depends kind of guy. Mm-hmm. I typically believe there is a correct answer. Mm-hmm. In this instance, the correct answer is going to depend on that individual's desire, like mm-hmm. what they want to be doing and how they want to be doing it. My general blanket feeling is there should be no more anybody going to law school. Mm-hmm. brilliant minds are spent going to law school and learning how to argue and learning how to represent people. And I get all that, but it's such a drain on, if you think about harnessing and redirecting all that brain power into engineering or medical or anything else other than being an attorney, I think would be a great use of people's time. So I have a lot of people ask me, hey, should I go to law and business school like you did? I'm like, no. If you want to be a business person, you can take two or three classes from the law school that are super helpful, whether it's contracts or legal writing, and not spend the extra 2 years in school and hopefully not become an attorney. But business school also is a toss-up, right? I mean, a big part of business school, I mean, you can learn a lot of stuff online, but a big part of business school is the network. In that sets of classes that you're in the year groups around you. So I'm if you need to learn skills and there's things that from a content standpoint that you need, and I did feel that I needed that coming out of the military. And you're going to glean that and learn that and really, you know, put your nose to the grindstone and learn that content. While you're also expanding your network and really like rubbing shoulders with people who have business experience in the thing that you want to go into. So it's a great place to learn that stuff. And I'm not saying there aren't, you know, a couple, three jobs out there that are perfect for somebody for, you know, with a law degree, but between the two, I would definitely select business school. If, like I said, your aspiration is to operate and run and manage inside of the businesses.
And one other aspect of that I wanted to ask about is, there's not many veterans that I'm aware of that have your current job, that they're an investor, that they're doing investments in startups. Do you have any advice for someone listening? If that's their aspiration, I think it would be difficult to follow your particular career path, but any advice for how they might pursue that as a career?
Path?
Exactly.
You see a path there?
Off-roading.
I'm not exactly clear what path there is.
Completely off-roading.
Sorry, say the question again.
I'm just wondering, what advice do you have for someone who's on active duty who, you know, one day aspires to be an investor or a venture capitalist?
Yeah, so fortunately or unfortunately, it's like the hardest, almost, I think it's the hardest kind of job to break into. I mean, we posted a slot for an associate through my LinkedIn profile. I put it up, and in 4 days we had like almost 700 applicants.
Oh, man.
And, you know, this is like many, many of them had, you know, multiple graduate degrees and years of experience in other categories. So I think come at it from a different direction. How can you be the best investor? And I think the way that you can be the best investor, and what we always urge our portfolio companies to look for in new investors that want to invest in their company, is to find operators. And by operators, I mean people who have actually been in their shoes, you know, the founders of businesses, so that they understand and can empathize with all the decisions, all the stress and pressure that exist in that environment. So they're not kind of giving guidance from book smarts. They're giving guidance from, you know, it's praxis versus gnosis, right? So from actual practical experience, it means a lot more. It's usually a lot more accurate. So it's just a much more authentic advisor, one that's sat in your shoes before.
Mm, I love that. I just imagine when you are giving interviews or things like that, you must get so many questions about The Apprentice. And I kind of wanted to avoid that, but I didn't want to jump over it completely. I was just curious what it was like in that room in that final episode where you're having three other people eliminated and you get that job. Just what that felt like and what that appearance on that show has done for you professionally.
Do you want to know monetarily? Do you want to know how it's evolved over the last 10 years? Because it certainly spiked up and down. So it was a complete kind of on a lark, applying through that process to get onto the show, and spending 14 months in New York working with Donald Trump was actually mind-blowing, as you might imagine. But what I learned about everything from managing media to really thinking about things in a very, very, very big way, you know, just that 14 months working with him, there's not a real good way to describe all of it, except that it was an incredibly valuable experience for me. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't trade it for anything.
I remember watching that show, and I think it's just, I don't think I'm alone on this, but it's so awesome to see someone with that military background getting such public recognition. I think it's like just great for the veteran community of showing that, you know, yes, we are capable in this business environment. I'm just really appreciative of that. I'm sure it worked out well for you personally, but I think it's just for the military community. Things like that are such great spotlights for showing the what a veteran can bring to a civilian organization.
Interestingly, when I moved to New York, the finale was like December of 2004, so it was a long time ago, but I think 30 million people watched the finale, basically like half a Super Bowl, right? So I show up in New York, and I'm, you know, invited to come be, you know, roll out the red carpet up at West Point. It's about an hour north of the city, to come back and talk to the faculty and cadets, because, you know, I'd been out of the military for 10 years, but I was suddenly the biggest name around the military because of the exposure from the show. So that was great, you know, and I went up to talk, and I actually was invited as part of my kind of touring and talking to people at school to go to the dean's office, which was very much like going to the principal's office. Typically at the time, you'd only go there if you were in trouble, but I had never been there before. So I walked in, and it was an old Colonel Kaufman when I knew him, but he was General Kaufman by the time that I'd won the show. And he was the dean now at the time. And I walk in, and he kind of grabs me by the shoulder and arm and says, "Kelly, I just got to tell you, you've done so much more for the military out of it than you could have ever done in it by representing us on that show." And I was like, thanks. So the show was airing. I didn't realize until I got all the feedback after, it was how many kids watched the show. Because it was kind of business rules. This, we got to remember, this is the beginning before they jumped the shark with kind of the crazy stuff and the celebrity things. And it's something the kids were watching with their parents, and they're really talking about real kind of, you know, basic business concepts and how they played out with people. And almost everybody could identify with every one of the situations that they'd gone through at some point in time in work. So it was pretty neat.
That's awesome. Well, I always like to keep the last question open-ended, which is, you know, I've asked questions that I thought would benefit people on active duty listening to this, but I'm sure there's things I didn't ask about that you would want to share with active duty or recently transitioned veterans. So I just wanted to make space here at the end for anything we didn't cover that you wanted to share with listeners that might help them as they think about their civilian career or that transition.
Well, it's a really big, like I said, jump, and it seems super scary at the time. There is a whole massive network, and I will say that it's probably one of the best networks I've ever seen in my life, of people who've come before you, right? You know, you aren't the first people to make this jump, and we all remember that trepidation and, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I don't know anything. And I'm here to tell you, you have a massive set of skills that a lot of people already recognize, understand, and value. And there is a massive network of your brethren that have already come before you and are out there to provide at least informational support on what you may or may not want to do. And once you get through that and start targeting the opportunities that you want, they're more than happy to take that meeting, help make introductions, and try to facilitate a smooth and successful transition, because it really helps everybody if that's what happens. So there are lots of groups, and you can search for that stuff online and find them, but generally speaking, you're the only one that's in charge of your career, so you're going to have to take charge of it and go after it.
Awesome. Well, Kelly, thank you for your time and your advice and your perspective. And as you said, that, or as the general said, what you've done for the military and the veteran community.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be on the show.
Surface.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Kelly. You know, really, when I speak with someone who's had the success that Kelly has, I'm used to sending a request and sending a reminder request and sending a reminder to reminder of request and playing the long game and getting at someone's schedule. I have to say that Kelly responded within minutes of me sending a request to be on the show. And when we scheduled it for 3 days after I asked, which is really extraordinary. And I just appreciate that for someone who has had such a successful career, he's still making himself available to assist and help the veteran community. I wanted to just kind of do a quick recap, some of the things that stood out for me from this conversation. I would welcome your feedback in the show notes for this episode, what stood out to you as well. The first thing was just that self-knowledge piece. For someone who has had such a diverse career background, I appreciated the way he talked about really listening to what energizes you, what motivates you, and being deliberate in finding a career that's going to offer that to you. I love what Kelly shared about how, as veterans, you have had millions of dollars invested in you in leadership training and giving and taking orders and doing things that you really can't get anywhere else in the civilian sector, and how valuable that is. And how, when he evaluates companies, how important it is that leadership background, the ability to show up on time and solve problems and execute and do all of that with integrity. And so while I know that many of you, and I know I was really intimidated about my upcoming transition to a civilian career, I hope that gives you some confidence of the wealth of experience you bring to the table. And while there's still so much you'll need to learn about whatever functional role you go after or industry you go after, I know that, you know, I hope that inspires you to know that you have so much going for you. I thought that Kelly provided a great overview of venture capital. I also really liked his approach to work-life balance. And I think he's a great example because he's obviously achieved a lot. He is obviously not wasting a lot of time, and yet he is prioritizing his family, his personal health, and the things that are necessary for him to really function at a peak state. And so I hope that gave some insight into that you can still have a very demanding career, but also put guardrails and roadblocks and just carve out sacred space that's important for whatever it is that keeps you energized and keeps you operating efficiently. And then lastly, I liked his parting words around the value of the military network. And I know that many of us, myself included, went to graduate school to expand that network. But I think he's right. I think that the value of the military network is really extreme. And I don't know about you, but for me, when I run into someone and they served in the Air Force or they served in the Coast Guard or whatever it is, I may have had nothing in common with them. But in that moment, I have 90% certainty about who this person is, what they stand for, the fact that they were willing to make a sacrifice, the fact that they were willing to put their country before themselves. And I feel like the level of connection I have with that person just upon meeting with them is, it takes years to get to that level with someone else. And so I know I'm not alone on that, and that value of the military network is so powerful, and I hope that's something that you will take advantage of. And it's something that I'm starting to talk about in the video section on beyondtheuniform.io, diving into more tactics and skills that might help you in your civilian career. So definitely check that out. If you've listened this far in, thank you. That might mean that you enjoy these episodes. And if you do enjoy the show, the best way to say thank you is if you could take 30 seconds and go to iTunes and leave a positive review for Beyond the Uniform. It's the most powerful way I've found to raise awareness of Beyond the Uniform as a completely free resource for the military and veteran community. So if you could take those 30 seconds to leave a positive review, that would be greatly, greatly appreciated. Have a great week. I will be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.